This is Financial Standard, the definitive source of news, thought leadership and analysis for Australian wealth management professionals. Financial Standard, take the lead.
Welcome to the Financial Standard podcast. I'm Financial Standard journalist Andrew McKean. I'm here with Super Members Council Chief Executive Misha Schubert to dig into the feasibility of the Liberals' publicly popular but seemingly short-sighted, and that's probably putting it nicely, idea to let Australians dip into their super to buy a home. Welcome, Misha.
Thank you so much for having me. What a great thing to be here.
Now, this is obviously a very controversial subject that's kind of been brought to the forefront, seemingly out of nowhere, but this idea has been proposed by Liberal Senator Andrew Bragg, who we had on the other week, actually. And he said that people should have the freedom and agency, essentially, to access their super to buy a home. This is, from what I've seen, a publicly popular move. But what's your take on this?
Well, look, it's really clear from all the evidence that the policy won't achieve what's been claimed for it, the idea that it would help more people into homes. And in fact, it would have a series of knock-on effects that would be quite damaging. So we know from all the clear economic evidence and modelling that we've done as the Super Members Council that it would unleash a huge price spike, house prices across the country. So we've modelled that, and it's sort of looking forward to that effect that it would be around a 9% addition to house prices. That would push up the median house price in Australia's five major capital cities by an average of $75,000 in an already really challenging housing market. So it would make housing more expensive, and ultimately would then encourage people to take money out of their super, so they'd lose those decades of compounding returns across the decades of your working life, have less super at retirement, pay more for the same house with a bigger mortgage you'd be paying off for longer. There'd be an intergenerational wealth transfer from younger Australians to typically older and wealthier Australians who'd be selling them the home. And then, of course, when people retire with less super, what happens? The age pension bill goes up for the country because more people are reliant on a bigger share of the age pension. That has a cost to taxpayers. And so every Australian taxpayer would pick up the bill. There's a really clear example not too far from home about why this wouldn't work in the way that's been claimed for it, and that's in New Zealand. So in 2007, KiwiSaver, their national scheme in New Zealand, allowed people to start accessing their super for home deposits. Fascinatingly, home ownership rates have declined in New Zealand since that period of time. And ultimately, it has removed choice and freedom, because now you see a trend where almost 90% of young Kiwis, and almost 9 in 10, now feel that they have to pull out that super just to be on a level playing field in those auction markets to get into the housing market. And so for those who may be wanting to, I think it removes that choice. So for all those reasons, the economic evidence is absolutely crystal clear that it won't achieve the goal, that is stated as the intention of the policy. And fascinatingly as well, where this policy idea had been looked at in previous generations, really strong economic managers had looked at that and concluded, for all of these reasons, it would not be a good policy idea for Australia to advance. So, there's evidence is on the record in previous generations that have looked at this and sort of concluded quickly that it would have that house price spike effect and make it harder for young Australians to get into home ownership.
But despite the fact that there is a body of evidence to suggest that this would be not a good idea, I think the public perception of it, at least, is that this is something they want, maybe from not having enough of a relationship with their super fund, or, feeling that it's locked away and it's kind of almost not their money, feel like they should be able to access it to do this in spite of those findings. So I guess from your perspective then, how do you win essentially the public relations war to kind of quash this?
Well, look, I know from my own observations when I've spoken to people, everyday members of super funds across our country in the course of my job, that when you explain all of those knock-on effects, people get it. Young Australians really get it. And having that opportunity to help people understand, there is a really important task for us as a country to urgently expand the supply of housing in our country. We desperately want to see more Australians own their own homes, absolutely. And the way to do that is by policy measures that expand the supply of housing in our country. That will get more people into homes, and that will also apply that downward pressure on house prices. Simply pushing more money in on the demand side of that equation will just push up house prices and then ultimately make it less affordable for young Australians into the future to own a home. really conscious that, you know, if you unleash that price hike effect, prices rise, that makes it even harder for the subsequent generations of young Aussies to get a foothold into the housing market. So it pushes that great Australian dream of home ownership even further away. So I know that when we have those sorts of conversations with young Australians, they get it. And all the economic evidence, all of the sort of work and analysis of, you know, credible, respected national economists across Australia is absolutely crystal clear on that effect. So I think, you know, that's really important. We're always going to conduct ourselves with courtesy and respect in the public discussion, vigorous public policy engagement, but always with that spirit of respect and courtesy and putting the facts clearly and the evidence clearly into the public policy discussion so that we assist in that important work of policymakers considering what is good policy.
It has been cited before that, you know, that home ownership is the key determinant to a happy retirement, you know, and I suppose this policy kind of, this proposed policy sort of preys on that sort of feeling, I guess.
Look, that's a false binary and it's, you know, a cruel choice. In essence, if people are saying, well, you know, young Australians, this generation of young Australians should be told to choose between having a house or having super to provide for a dignified retirement. No other generation of Australians has been asked to make a choice like that. In fact, they've had both. And ultimately, again, let's look at what the evidence shows. The evidence shows really clearly it's not a choice in that sense between those two things, because people who would then be in a position still to buy homes would ultimately buy a house anyway, but they'd be buying it with a much bigger price tag attached to it and they would lose the value of their super. So the really important, you know, reminder to ourselves as a country about the remarkable thing that we've created in Australia's super system is the way it works so powerfully. So, you know, we have these contributions that are paid on by our employer on our behalf into our super accounts across our working lives. Because those savings are preserved and saved, safeguarded until we reach the age of 60, they compound and they grow and grow and grow across the work, the years of your working life. So that those compounding returns that continue through the life cycle because those savings are preserved until 60 is the magical formula about why that works in such a powerful way. So I think that construction isn't a helpful one. It's not an accurate one because actually it would just mean that ultimately people end up paying more for the house they buy and so they lose the benefits of that super. They're paying more for the same house and ultimately with a bigger mortgage and a longer retirement frame. Our modelling shows that a 30-year-old couple who withdrew $35,000 each from their super today could retire with about $195,000 less in today's dollars in their super balances by retirement. So that's a really mind-focusing piece of the evidence to consider the choices, you know, that would be the consequences of that sort of policy as well. It is a really important thing that we have good public policy in this country that safeguards the interests of Australians and that makes, good public policy based on the clearest possible evidence base. And that's what we seek to do, is to ensure that those public policy deliberations are informed by really clear, rigorous evidence.
Now, another, I suppose, critique is some people have dismissed claims that, you know, using super for housing will drive up prices. They contest the research. And I feel like they cite, you know, other economists, independent economists who believe the impact would be minimal. Now, whether or not that stands to be true or not is one thing, but it definitely creates noise for the public. How do you address that skepticism again towards the modelling that's being conducted? And how can we, you know, from a public perception, verify that the modelling that you've provided is more reliable?
Every credible economist in the country is absolutely clear on the central point, which is that the policy would lead to a rise in house prices, and absolutely understanding that effect that it would push up house prices and therefore make housing less affordable, not more affordable for young Australians is really important. So there are a whole range of, you know, really eminent national economists who've been commentating on public policy for decades of their lives who are absolutely crystal clear on that. I think the evidence is really squarely clear for those who follow these discussions. And, you know, these are people who are genuinely interested in how we deliver good public policy that delivers for the majority of Australians. So I think the evidence is rigorous, robust, and absolutely crystal clear.
One thing the coalition is doing is that it is planning to present a more detailed housing supply policy rather than demand policies before the next election. How do you plan to engage with these policy discussions given what they've said on the demand side? And what role do you see for super funds in addressing this broader housing affordability crisis?
Well, it's a really important policy conversation for the country, and we engage across the breadth of the parliamentary spectrum of policymakers always in that spirit of, you know, wanting to ensure that good public policy is, you know, the path for our country. So, you know, conversations about expansion of housing supply, you know, we think are really, really important for all people, all policymakers to be attending to in a really urgent way. That is a really crucial part of how we are going to see more Australians in their own homes. So we will continue to engage in that that spirit of respectful engagement and to encourage policymakers of all variety of, you know, traditions to be focusing their efforts, you know, squarely into that supply side of the equation, because policies that simply push more money in on the demand side just inflate house prices.
And I think it'd be interesting as well for our audience perhaps to know what other, you know, key priorities the SMC has going forward at the moment, aside from sort of fighting against this policy that's been brought forward.
We, as I say, we respectfully engage in these conversations and put the evidence kind of clearly before people to inform that discussion. Look, there are many topics that are of interest to us. So we're a new organisation created late in 2023 with the idea, central purpose, to speak up for the interests of 11 million everyday Australians who have their retirement savings in profit to member super funds, and to be bringing that strong member or consumer lens to public policy considerations to advance the best financial interests of those members in the public policy making processes. So amongst the many priorities that we have, you know, there's a huge looming kind of demographic trend that's about to unfold in our country. You've got 2.5 million Australians headed for retirement. So that sort of silver tsunami is coming on towards their retirement age. We think there's some important things that need to be thought through about how we design the retirement phase of super to the next level of detail to assist that coming demographic wave. There are some things about that that we think you could elegantly sort of bust some red tape in. So, you know, once was that people would sort of capital R retire, if you like, in a sort of hard stop way. They'd leave the office on a Friday with their pot plant under their arm and never really come back to paid work. Increasingly, I think that trend is very different. So we're seeing people increasingly maybe retire from their full-time, you know, large job sort of situation, but then might want to dip in every now and again to the paid workforce. At the moment in retirement, if you move to a retirement product in super, you've got to have a second account set up as an accumulation one to pay your extra super account, you know, fees, super contributions into that with two sets of fees. We think there's a really elegant bit of red tape busting that policymakers could seize the opportunity to advance there. We're also very interested on the provision, expanding the provision of high quality, low cost financial advice to more Australians, to millions of Australians, in a way that helps people to engage more actively with their super at those key points in your life where it can make a big difference ultimately to your retirement savings, for you to kind of engage actively and to enable people to access that on a much larger scale. There are some pieces of important legislation that will be working their way through the Parliament this year, and we really see those as being absolutely pivotally important to ensuring that millions of Australians can have access to the tools and advice they need without sort of the Rolls-Royce, you know, higher price point options, but, you know, just some sensible, more contained pieces of advice that many, many people want and don't currently have the access to that they would like.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for your time today, Misha.
A pleasure. Thank you so much for the opportunity.
Thanks for listening to this Financial Standard podcast. For more information, visit financialstandard.com.au. Please keep in mind that the information discussed in this podcast is general in nature and does not consider personal circumstances. Reliance should not be placed on any content without further independent financial research and advice.